been read. I have given my statement. This is a continuation. We have already taken public testimony on this item. However, I had a request from Brad Molson, who is here today, if he could testify. I would like to extend that courtesy before we invite the Housing Bureau up. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Brad Molson, Central Eastside Industrial Council President and Beam Development and the board founding board member of the Innovation Quadrant. I'm here to support the multi-program, but I'm here to read a kind of to give you a sense of caution that I'm seeing out in the world of development right now. And there is a lot of fear and hesitation and challenge to keep our development cycle going. The land prices are escalating. Construction costs are escalating beyond reason. And people are fearful, developers are fearful that with inclusionary zoning, we can't make a lot of projects work. As I think most of you know, there's a theory that if we reduce the amount of residential development, and I'm not specifically a residential developer, but I have done some and I still continue to do, so I'm concerned about the effect on affordable housing. It seems contrary to reason that we would build more market rate and how it would affect, but it obviously creates an environment where we can leverage affordable housing and the competition works to drive down prices at some point. With that said, I'm also concerned about the design review. I'm concerned about the recent occurrence of the project in the Pearl that was squashed.
I'm sorry, but we can't talk about that. That's in a separate process.
Oh, we can't?
Process.
Sorry.
Yeah,
we
can't
take testimony.
That process is not concluded, so...
Okay.
Please, yeah.
I withdraw that.
Move on.
Anyway, I'm here to support multi. I'm here to try to create the context of supporting development, smart development, conscious development, local development that I think will bolster opportunities for everyone. So with that, I welcome any questions that you might have.
I have one question.
Commissioner Fish. We
had a chance in the last hearing to ask two experts, if we adopt this, will someone take advantage of it? Now, I'm going to support this proposal in the hope that it encourages someone. You're an active developer. Can you tell us whether you are hopeful that with this tweak, someone who beat the deadline on inclusionary housing will in fact take advantage of this additional incentive plan?
I'm convinced that it's another tool in the toolbox for us to look at. We have to layer in all of the opportunities, and as a development community, I think that this is a program that we can use to move forward. Absolutely.
Okay, that sounds... Like maybe leaning yes?
Leaning yes.
I mean, obviously, there are a lot of market conditions. I mean, it is staggering. We have 3 years of development in the pipeline that beat the inclusionary housing deadline. So that'll take 3 years to clear the pipeline if it's all built. We have a crane on every corner of the city. We've never seen, the Bureau of Development Services has never seen so many permits pulled and so much revenue. So we're obviously... all interested in continuing to support a robust housing market. The concern that I think this council has demonstrated time and time again is that the market is not serving a lot of people. There are people to whom the market is not serving right now. And that's why we need to look at a mix of carrots and sticks. And it is, I think, the mayor's hope that this proposal on multi will encourage some developers to step up, and maybe you'll be one of them. But we hope that there are people who do take advantage of this.
I believe that will be the case. And realize, as you well know, the development cycle takes 3 to 4 years between concept to, you know, delivering to the market. So we're reaching that point right now where things will change. We'll hit a cliff, and I believe that residential development will fall significantly unless we take some action.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll call up Shannon Callahan and Matt Chibold from the Housing Bureau. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning. Good morning, Commissioner. Shannon Callahan from the Portland Housing Bureau, joined by Dory Van Bockel, the Development Incentive Teams Manager, and Matt Chibold, Assistant Director.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Matt. As Commissioner Fish just said, I know we all are concerned about the ongoing provision of housing in general and affordable housing. I have some questions about this particular proposal. So what is the average exemption per unit per month for the affordable units?
So in our analysis, looking back a couple of years into the multi-program, the tax exemption per affordable unit on average would equal to $833 per month.
And what is the expected average market rate of these units?
We newly constructed units in the central city on average are going for $2,000 a month. Across the city, newly constructed units are approximately $1,700 a month.
So in the central city, we would be enabling somebody to live in a $2,000 a month apartment for about $1,100 a month?
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay. Do we know how many units this overall will, if it worked out to the maximum $3 million a year, how many units overall?
We would expect 300 affordable units, Commissioner.
For $3 million?
Yes.
Okay. Not for $3 million. The $3 million is the cap for all of the tax abatement program. But that's the tax abatement per year for 300 units.
For the $3 million cap, yes.
For across all of our programs? In this program.
In this program.
So what's...
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
I just don't want to muddle the record here. We have a $3 million cap with the county for all tax abatement programs. With the multi-program, we're capturing the value that has not been used, but the cap has not been lifted.
We would propose to remain within the agreed upon cap with the county. The number of units that we would expect to receive from a $3 million foregone revenue would be approximately 300 affordable units.
And this is the only program that's in this program at this point, right?
Commissioner, the inclusionary housing program would still be under the same cap that Commissioner Fish is speaking of, but it's all together combined, so we would not be increasing the cap overall.
Okay, and we're not expecting to get any inclusionary housing because of the rush of applications before the deadline is for the next two years.
We have received some inclusionary housing proposals, but we are confident that we will be able to remain within the cap. In addition, the $3 million was agreed last year by the county to be on a rolling basis so we can meet the highs and lows of a development cycle in a five-year period.
Okay, so I am concerned about a $900 a unit subsidy for new construction. When I was a low-income wage earner, I didn't expect to be able to live in new construction. I lived in fairly substandard housing and would have appreciated a much deeper assistance had it been available rather than $900 going to live in brand new. And that's just obviously it's a policy choice. Are the market rate units in the projects allowed unlimited rent increases?
We do not regulate the market rate units for the multi-program, so they would be under the same state and local laws. So they are allowed to raise rents in accordance with state law, but they would be subject to the City Council's mandatory relocation assistance policy.
And then back to the question of the caps. Does the $500,000 per development, does that tend to then favor the smaller developments? Because the larger ones would bang up against it.
Our intent was to exclude what would be considered luxury high-end apartment buildings. And so that's why we did a per-project cap. And it could benefit more units that were outside the central city than inside based on that $500,000 per project cap.
Okay. And you just mentioned relocation. At the end of 10 years, the rents will go up by at least $900 a month, so presumably these tenants will need to move out. These tenants will then be eligible for relocation assistance?
They would be if they met the parameters. We don't have experience with seeing what happens after year 10, but yes, they would meet current City Council policy.
Thank you. And for projects with an FAR floor area ratio of 5-1 or more, the only choice is 20% at 80% median family income. Why are we not allowing the choice of 10% at 60% median family income? Because that's what we got in the inclusionary housing.
I believe we would allow that, but we do not require that as a basis for the tax exemption. If they wanted to give us deeper affordability, we would allow that, but it would not be a requirement of that building type.
But it's a different level. So it's 10% under inclusionary housing, it's 10% at 60% or 20% at 80%. So there'd be no incentive for them to do 10% at 60% because that wouldn't get you to 20%. So why are we not just mirroring what we've got in inclusionary housing?
The tax exemption at 10% at 60% under this program, I don't know if we have the calculation, but it would double. We think we'd be over enriching.
Okay.
And the reason that inclusionary zoning, Commissioner, was set up with 20% at 80 and 10 at 60 is because the need in the city is at 60% clearly, but we're required by state statute. We cannot require anything that is lower than 80%. So it was our way, your way, of trying to encourage the production of 60% units.
Well, that was why I'm wondering why we're not doing it in this program, because as you just said, the need is at 60%, not really at 80%. So we're spending $30 million or forgiving $30 million, not taking in $30 million, which we could otherwise spend elsewhere, to get 80% medium income housing. Is that correct?
We would be allowing 80% housing and FAR 5 and above. That is essentially the central city area. It could be a policy choice that this council could make to lower the inclusion rate and require it 60%, but that is a very rich tax exemption product per unit.
Okay. You've got information in here about accessibility, about 5% accessible, adaptable, which I appreciate because I think the state mandate is only 2%, which is... So it's given that some of these projects will be smaller, is that 5% or 1%, whichever is greater?
Yes.
Good. And then thank you, Dori Van Bockel, for providing information that I asked for last hearing about the tax exemptions. And in looking at the numbers of total affordable units and the estimated foregone revenues, the numbers are not at all the same as $900 a month. The average in 2015 was $400 a month. The average in 2016 was $600. In 2017, it was $337. And in year-to-date, it's only been $90 a unit is what we've forgiven, according to these numbers. So it seems this program, as proposed, is more than twice as generous.
In the data used for our presentation that Matt gave last week, it was taking out projects that also had additional subsidy or were for other reasons providing additional affordable units. And so looking at any pool of data in a particular way, we wanted to show the worst or most that we could be providing based on purely for-profit developments.
Okay. Well, obviously, these are my concerns, and I think $900 a unit could be, if we had that, we could direct it into rent assistance elsewhere. That would be a better way to go. This is an emergency ordinance. You need unanimous consent to pass it, Mayor. So I'm going to go talk to a man about a dog, and I'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. Other questions? Please call the roll.
Fish.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the mayor for bringing this forward, and I want to thank the Housing Bureau for the briefings that we've received and the answers to our questions. We heard some sobering statistics the other day when the Housing Bureau presented at budget time. And Madam Director, you'll correct me if I get this wrong, but we've identified that there's about at least 24,000 units of deeply affordable housing that were short in the marketplace. And we're also seeing a lot of so-called luxury housing coming online that's out of the reach of middle-income, working families, and the poor. So when the market, when there's a market mismatch, it seems to me it is incumbent on government to act to remedy that. And the market is not working great for lower-income people, so it is our job to take some action. As my colleagues know, I am very focused on people that of very modest means, because I think if we had a dollar to spend, I would always prefer to create a subsidy for someone who's really struggling on the margins. But the truth is, our housing crisis is affecting people throughout the spectrum. We have an enormous number of renters who are cost burdened. Now they have a roof over their head, but they're spending way too much money of their income on their rent, and therefore they don't have resources for other necessities of life. We've got people living on our streets, and we've got people doubled up on couches and in cars, and we've got people that can't find an affordable house a unit. We also learned that the success rate for Section 8 is in the 70s, which is well below what we as a community hope to get to. So the mayor has proposed a tool which, in my view, is an imperfect tool, and it's not even my favorite tool. But it does offer the promise of getting some affordable units. And I think in a crisis, we should be opportunistic. And here's why ultimately I'm persuaded we should do this. You've made some tweaks to the program, which I like. You've engaged the development community, and we think someone's going to take advantage of this. We hope so. Even at 80%, that is an area that there is need in our community. Although I'm pleased that most of our federal dollars and our tax increment dollars and other programs target lower on the income range, and by policy, we focus on people in greater need. But this has the promise to adding something. And I want to address the one question that was put on the table a couple of minutes ago about what might we do with this money if we had an alternative. One of the things that I think we lose track of is that it is a cornerstone value, not just of the federal government through HUD, but it is a cornerstone value of your bureau, that we invest in opportunity. And that means that our long-term goal is that if you are low income, if you're a low-income family and you're choosing where to live, you'll have the same choices at some point that people who are more affluent have, people that can decide where they want to live and where they want to send their kids to school. And opportunity is a cornerstone of what we do. And it is the reason that we've accepted this trade-off about putting some affordable units in new construction in places that are nice, because we want people to have the choice to live in neighborhoods that have good transportation and parks and infrastructure. And that's the kind of community we want to be. So it's not my favorite program for a number of reasons. Yes, I would love to serve people lower down the income stream. But it is, in a crisis, it is another tool. And that's what Brad Melson said. It's another tool in the kit, which we hope someone takes advantage of. It operates within the $3 million cap that we've already agreed to, so it's really not competing against other programs, because we've already said we'll set aside $3 million a year for this and other programs, and that's baked in. And frankly, while I've heard some sort of on the margins some criticisms about this, I haven't heard something which convinces me we shouldn't try. And I think we should be willing to try things. And I know you'll come back to us in 2 years, and if you think this program wasn't as successful as we hoped or needed to be refined, you'll come back with suggestions. And finally, because we know this program has to be renewed by the legislature in a couple years, I want to pick up on a comment we've heard from one of my colleagues and some people testifying, that I think we should ask for the authority in any new program that's authorized by the legislature to offer a 10-year renewal at the 60% level. Because my guess is that if we made one change in this program that got more developers interested, it is giving people an objective test and certainty that there could be a 10-year renewal, which doubles the benefit and limits the likelihood that someone will be displaced from that unit because they're now above income. That's a long-winded way of saying I'm persuaded that this is worth trying. Again, thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for bringing it forward. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I do believe this is a well-intentioned proposal and one I will support. And I appreciate Mayor Wheeler for bringing this forward. I guess I want to express my concern about sort of the drumbeat we just heard from Brad Molson, and we're starting to hear from many people that, you know, inclusionary housing spells the end of the world. We're going to fall off a cliff. There's going to be no residential development in Portland in 3 to 4 years. And I hope this council will not listen to that. I hope this council will be resolute in its insistence that inclusionary housing is as much a bedrock of developing a residential project in the city of Portland, and that's what it needs to become. It's a bedrock, it's not going to change, and it has to be accepted by the development community as much as compliance with fire code or building code is. These are things that are not debatable. That's what inclusionary housing must become. When it becomes that, and this council and the state legislature indicate they're not going to yield on it, then it will be accepted, and it will no longer be a discussion point. But right now we're hearing, you know, drumbeats, innuendos, and everything, setting inclusionary housing up to be the fall person when the economy does cool down and residential development does cool down. It's going to happen. We all know that. And I think it's just important. I'm going to be speaking out now, but I do hope this council will remain resolute in its insistence that, as Commissioner Fish just said, that people of modest means have the right to live in these good projects, in these good neighborhoods, with good access to education, transit, and amenities that everybody else deserves. They don't deserve to be pushed out to the outskirts of our city or beyond our city. They need to have a place to live in the city of Portland. So I'm segued a little bit, but I was concerned about the testimony that was just given, and I just wanted to express that in this forum. But I am pleased. And I also know that the some 19,000 units that have presently vested and are not subject to inclusionary housing, many of those permits are going to expire. Land use approvals will expire before those projects are ready to be built. So they're going to have to come back to us, and they're going to have to confront inclusionary housing, which I believe is a very worthy policy goal that this city worked very hard on to get the legislature to give us the permission to do it. And we worked very hard on this, and Shannon Callahan and Matt Schibold in particular worked very hard on making the policy that we adopted that took a place a little over a year ago to be one that can work. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Hugh Daly.
Yeah, thank you for those remarks. I'm feeling a little verklempt right now. I want to also express my support in general for inclusionary zoning. I'm concerned that it's going to be used as a scapegoat for a downturn in development, which we knew was coming, I think, prior to the passage of this policy. I'm not convinced that we have the perfect equation for abatement and length of affordability, but I think we're close. So I'm open to those conversations, although I'm absolutely committed to keeping IZ in place. We have a shortage of affordable units. So today we're incentivizing affordability in new construction of units that are already in the pipeline. And since we know that we don't need 19,000 market rate or luxury units added to that, to our inventory, I think this is a smart move. I don't see it as a subsidy to renters, but to developers willing to partner with us and deliver the type of housing that we need, which is, in this case, workforce housing at 60 to 80%. Our dollar goes further in the short term. I mean, I don't want to make a claim that's not entirely true, but we're roughly giving an abatement we're giving an abatement that's roughly equivalent to what we might invest in affordable housing, which is about $100,000 a unit. However, we'd expect a much longer affordability period than 10 years. But we're in a crisis. This housing is going to exist. Let's try to capture some of it. It's still half of what we would spend on building an affordable unit ourselves with our housing bond dollars. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
So I am more optimistic about the potential for this program. This is really the only way we can reach back into the pipeline that was in the pipeline prior to inclusionary housing becoming an ordinance here in the city of Portland. And so the reality is, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, those 19,000 units of the ones that actually get built, let's say it's 10,000, they will all come on as market rate units. There will be no affordability, not 80% in the central city, not 60% outside of the central city. So the question is, do we want to use an abatement to incentivize that kind of activity? I have come to the conclusion that, yes, we absolutely do want to do that. The second question, then, is one that was raised, I think, correctly by Commissioner Fritz. There is a policy call here. And the question is, if we instead waited for that market rate housing to actually be constructed and come on the market, we would collect taxes from that market rate housing. And then we could decide, rather than a subsidy through a tax abatement, whether we wanted to use the tax revenues on something else. And she had suggested we could use it perhaps in a different housing situation or for vouchers or other purposes that the council designates. That is a compelling argument. But the reality is, as the director has said, we're talking about 300-ish units. Personally, I think we'll do better than that, but let's say publicly 300 units out of 10 to 19,000 units. This is a small sliver of tax abatement in exchange for immediate affordability on a fairly limited number of units. Commissioner Fritz asked a great question about the 80% in the central city. And I just want to remind people that in the central city, we're talking about tall steel and cement towers. The construction costs, therefore, per unit are higher. The rents per unit are higher. And if you go below that 80%, there are going to be very, very few takers for this abatement because it just factually it won't pencil out. And we've done that analysis based on the historic multi-programs, and we've come to that conclusion. As far as the $500,000 per project, I think that is a reasonable cap based on historic standards that we've already demonstrated. I also want to address this issue of could we go lower? All of these projects, in fact, will come back to the city council. And therefore, if the council chooses, we could go beyond the tax abatement. If we wanted to provide a direct subsidy from the general fund or other sources, that's still on the table. But that's not what this program is. This program is using tax abatement as a strategy to make it economically viable for developers who have every right now to develop only market rate housing, because they got in under the wire prior to inclusionary housing, to incentivize them instead to create some affordability throughout the city, including in the central city. So I think this is a very good addition to our portfolio of affordability. This will not solve the housing crisis, nor has anybody proposed that it would. But from my perspective, if we want affordability built now, the best place to look at is at all those projects that are going through the permitting process, that are going through their pre-development phase, that are ready to actually be built and have some of those units, which could come on as soon as a year from now, be affordable, as opposed to when we work through new housing, even under inclusionary housing, that's going to take 3 or 4 years before we see that housing. And the crisis, as I said up front, is today. So I obviously wouldn't have brought this if I don't support it. So I'm voting aye. I support it. The ordinance is adopted.